I knew it was doomed from the start.
For an amazing time.
Basil was right, of course. He usually was. May he rest in peace.
And his bumper coming out of bowl, big man...
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Brian Johnston introducing The Amazing Test Match Crime by Adrian Allington. Dramatized by Peter Thompson, with Tom Wilkinson, Madeline Smith, Trevor Nichols, Nicholas Leprevost, and Bill Patterson.
Oh, yes. He was an amazing man. An amazing test match.
An audacious crime. I'll give you that.
In the 1930s, Adrian Allington wrote a book. He called it The Amazing Test Match Crime, and it was sold as fiction. Of course, both he and the reading public knew it was nothing of the sort. But the laws of libel were, and still are, troublesome creatures, so he was understandably cautious. 50 years have passed since then, and yet it is only now that we can bring you what would be called in the publishing trade the unexpurgated version. The reasons for this will become clear to you as our story unfolds. Some of the principal protagonists involved in this extraordinary story have kindly allowed themselves to be interviewed, and their testimony sheds new light on the startling events that took place that long summer past. Those parts of the story that we feel have been most fully corroborated, we have dramatized. The rest is from source. On one count, alas, we have failed. We were hoping to bring you an interview with perhaps the most extraordinary of the participants in this story, the Professor. We're convinced he's still alive, but sadly, we failed to track him down. Our researcher has been following a path now for 3 years, a path that began in an antiquarian bookshop in Tottenham Court Road, moved on to Victoria Station, involved a decommissioned submarine, a camel train, the Trans-Siberian Railway, a hair-raising encounter with the Ichu tribe of Tanzania, the World Bank, revolutions in 3 separate continents, a hairdresser in Panama, an ice hockey team from the Fiji Islands, the Sultan of Brunei, and finally, a second-hand fishing tackle shop in Rio de Janeiro. There, the trail finally went cold. This is a great pity, since the professor is the only man still alive who could tell us who his employers were. The 30s in Britain. A war behind and a war ahead. It is perhaps inevitable that our story, amidst all the drama and tragedy that was to come, should be forgotten. But we believe that but for these events, that war might never have happened. And we might not now be what we are. A nation without an empire. Ladies and gentlemen, The Amazing Test Match Crime.
One must set this thing in some sort of context.
Sir Norman Blood, ex-captain of England and son to Sir Timothy Blood.
You see, one must remember that the two nations had just emerged from a most bruising and destructive confrontation. I'm referring to the Bodyline controversy, of course. So this test series was always going to be a delicate affair. Bridges needed to be mended, amity restored, decency re-established.
Nicely put, no?
Mr. Lethbridge, ex-captain of Australia.
I'd only played the game once or twice, so it all came as a bit of a surprise.
Joe Prestrick. Joe and his wife Monica, with their 2 sons Jack and Len, still live in the sleepy village of Wattlecombe Deuces, still in the cottage they moved into after their marriage.
We called it Googly Cottage, after one of my best balls. Anyway, where was I?
You were telling him how we met.
Oh, that's right. Now, remember, this was all in the year before the year, you know, the year when all this happened, you see, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnston.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnston.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Well, this was a year before. So it were Boggers Parva that we were playing.
I think you should explain who we were, dear.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, we were Wattlecombe Deuces. That's where we came from. That's in Glebeshire. And we were playing Boggers Parva.
Well, you weren't exactly.
No, that's right. I wasn't playing the game. I was just watching, you see.
A spectator.
That's right. And you see, I'd never played the game before.
Only once or twice.
Only once or twice, you see. Anyways, I'm standing there by the boundary.
Near the pavilion?
Near the pavilion. And the club captain comes up to me.
Tom Apps.
Tom Apps, that's right. So, it appears, Mr. Johnson, that Tom Apps, the blacksmith, who's Wattle Conducis's fast bowler, has been hit in he's been hit by a horse, and so he can't play. So this captain comes up to me, and he says, you Joe Prestwick? Yes, I says back.
Ever played cricket before?
Once or twice.
Well, you're playing now. Well, chop, chop, we're in the field.
So there I was on the field.
Braces.
The problem was, I was wearing braces.
Poor old Joe, wearing braces.
That's right.
He'll never be allowed to forget it.
Anyway, the score's 40 for no wicket, and that squire's son's going like the clappers. And the captain comes up to me and says,
ever bowled before?
Only once or twice.
Well, you're bowling now.
And everybody was laughing in the pavilion.
Because you were wearing braces.
Yeah, but they were soon laughing on the other side of their faces, though, weren't they?
By the by golly, he's out! That braces chap here's bowled my son.
It was his braces, Peter. They put me off. Damn it, you can't expect a fella to bat against a man in braces.
Rotten shell.
And it weren't long before it were 41 for 5.
When I arrived.
And that's when Monica arrived. Or Miss Monica, as I called you then.
41 for 5? What a wizard spell. I must cycle off to fetch Sir Timothy.
And Sir Timothy arrived just in time to see old Joe take the last Boghurst wicket.
My goodness. He's taken all 10 wickets.
But good heavens, girl, the fella's playing in braces.
Does that matter?
Huh? I would rather see the whole village dead at my feet than a man bowling for the team in braces.
Peter was a great believer in things. Fine man, though I am. May he rest in peace.
I mean, no.
Well, I was stumped for a moment, but suddenly I had a brilliant idea. I jumped on my bike and pedalled off. Poor old Joe, though.
Oh, what?
Nobody talked to you.
Oh, that's right. Nobody would talk to me on account of my braces.
Until I came back, peddling away, fit to burst. I jumped off my bike and came towards you. With a cricket belt in my hand.
Oh, with a cricket belt in her hand.
Wear this, please.
Oh, thanks awfully.
Oh, not at all. Wear it, please, for my sake. Good luck in the second innings. One day I know you will play for England.
Wear it, please, for my sake. Miss Monica.
Well, of course, the rest is no doubt recorded in some scorebook somewhere. 10 wickets in the second innings, making all 20 in the match. No mean feat. Still, one must remember that we're talking about club cricket here, not get things out of perspective.
Well, Sir Timothy, isn't he good?
Trousers should be kept in position by invisible means, or failing that, by a scarf bearing the colours of a good club. But the boy is undoubtedly a discovery.
Well, Peter was right, of course. The boy was a discovery. His batting was a little bit agricultural. One couldn't expect anything else under the circumstances. But his bowling was interesting enough to warrant a place in the Glebeshire county side by the end of that summer.
All 20 wickets, you say?
No.
Must admit I'd never heard that story before.
Ralph Blessinger, who with his wife Alice now lives a settled and uneventful life in a country south of Spain and north of the Sahara. Daily he greets his neighbours, and none think to ask him what he might once have done for a living.
That previous summer? Well, I think it was the summer of the presidential assassination, wasn't it? Of course, everybody thought he died in his sleep. But by the time the Australians docked in Southampton, we were back in Europe.
Yeah, that's right. Norman Blood was captain of Glebeshire. Sir Norman, as he is now. And he was kind enough to pick me for the last few county games of that season, you see, Mr. Johnson. Well, it's the sort of thing schoolboys dream about. But in my case, it weren't a dream. It were the truth. It were like a dream come true. Not that I'd ever dreamed I'd play.
Of course, Norman was strongly favoured to lead the side against the Australians the following year. He was a wonderful cricketer and a wonderful man.
She said that, did she? How is she? Been years since I've seen her. Fine woman. Still live in Googly Cottage, does she? Anyway, enough of that. Where were we? Ah, yes, the arrival of the Australians the next summer. Keenly anticipated, bodyline series and all that. Quite an event, eh, Leth?
Well, we took our cricket seriously, didn't we, Norm?
Listen to them arriving. I remember wondering whether I'd ever get a chance to bowl against them in a test match.
Gazing at the belt.
Yeah, gazing at the belt I'd been given by Miss Monica.
Polishing it.
I'm polishing it. The buckle, that is. I'm writing poems in my head and listening.
As I stand here amidst this great crowds of enthusiastic humanity, I can see the lights flickering over Southampton docks. It's like fairyland. The fleet is all lit up to welcome to these hallowed shores the mighty Australians, who, within a month, a little month, will launch a new test series. And here comes Lethbridge, captain of Australia and batsman extraordinaire. And following him comes Bumper, vice-captain and fast bowler extraordinaire. Hyperion's curls, the front of Jove himself, though a veritable demon on the field of play. And I'm shuffling my way through this seething mass of mortal coil to put to Lethbridge those questions that I know are hanging on everyone's lips. Mr. Lethbridge, on behalf of the BBC and the world, may I welcome you to these hallowed shores.
Everyone is very fit.
Everyone is very fit. That's absolutely splendid. Now, so tell me, how do you see the test matches going?
May the best team win.
That's right, Skip.
Splendid, splendid. Now, Trent Bridge, it has been said, is an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Does this in any way worry you?
One for all and all for one.
Now, Mr. Bumper, there are players that I have seen play and heard others praise them that highly. But you, Mr. Bumper, oh, my goodness, all the lights have gone out. They've put out all the lights. All the fairy lights have departed and left no addresses. It's gone all dark. Well, I never. No sun, no moon. Will you shut up?
Well, yes, of course, I hoped I'd be asked to be captain for the series. But you must remember that cricket's the king of games and the game of kings, and nothing's won until it's not lost. So I never counted my chickens before they hatched. But, yes, I was hopeful.
Your dad was one of the selectors, wasn't he?
I hardly think that has any bearing on the matter.
Oh, yes, yes. I adored the game, all right. No two ways about it. I live for it, still do. But, as the bard says, there's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow.
You could have played, Ralphie.
Shut up, Alice.
Blessinger, Ralph Blessinger. No, can't say I do. Now, wait a minute. Yes, by George, of course.
Am I right in thinking you were Sir Norman Blood's fag at school?
Oh, so you've ferreted that out, have you? Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, I was.
My fag. Always burning the toast. Well, well, well. Good God, I hadn't thought about him for donkeys. Clever little fella. Good little leggy, too. Hold your horses. Wasn't he expelled or something? That's right. For drinking port in a pub after lights out. Caused quite a stir at the time. Nice flipper, if memory serves me correctly.
I was discovered in the pub by the French master, Mr. Pablo. I took out my gun and shot him.
He just wasn't done drinking in pubs. The head had no choice. What do we used to call him? That's right. Ralph the Disappointment. Could have been a useful leggy. What about him, anyway?
The professor called us the bad men.
had a rather sophisticated sense of humour.
You're joking. Blessinger? One of the bad men? No, impossible. Good God. Do you think we drove him to it?
Couldn't help worshipping him, despite the fact that he was unspeakably vicious. It was often the way, isn't it, Alice?
Yes.
Yes, she says.
Well, well, well. One of the bad men, eh? Nice looking boy, too.
That summer.
It was a wonderful summer, wasn't it, old Joe?
Oh, it was, yeah.
Summer and sunshine and falling in love, as the song has it. Of course, Daddy and I went to all the tests.
Well, the first four tests hadn't produced a result, as you probably know. Well, of course, the Old Trafford test was rained off, and the Headingley wicket was a batsman paradise. You scored a few there, didn't you, Lou?
186 and 227 not out, no?
So the last test at the Oval was awaited with keen anticipation. And remember that it was timeless, timeless test, to be fought to the finish. They'd never tried that before, had they, Lou?
No, that's right, no?
A timeless test match. Oh, it was terribly exciting. In fact, it had been a wonderful series altogether. That man Lethbridge was a giant of a cricketer. Rather put our Mr. Blood in the shade, didn't he? But I was terribly homesick. Remember that I hadn't been back to England for over 10 years.
After the fourth test, went back to Glebeshire. Stayed with Pater in the manor house. Remember sitting out on the lawn. Glorious summer day. Not the faintest inkling of what was to come.
Willis, we'll have tea under the trees today.
Yes, Timothy.
Oh, and Willis, put out an extra teacup, would you? We may be having a visitor.
Would that be the lovely Miss Monica, young Mr. Norman?
Willis, huh? How many times have I got to tell you that he is not to be addressed as young Mr. Norman? Oh. You are addressing Mr. Norman Blood, Captain of England and Batsman Extraordinaire.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that, Father. After all, I've only scored one century all summer, and all four matches have been drawn.
True, but don't forget, you scored your century at Lord's, which, as you know, my boy, is the headquarters of the game, as well as the mecca of cricket lovers in all corners of the globe.
Yes, I know, Father.
At Lord's. And by George, my boy, I love every stick and stone, every brick and blade of the old place.
I know, Father.
It was at Lord's in the gentlemen and players match of 97 that I was batting with Tiddles Marshbanks.
That wouldn't be SPQ Marshbanks, Cambridge and Southshire.
The same, my boy. I was one of the few who were privileged to address him as Tiddles. Oh, well, as I say, we were betting...
Here comes Monica.
Cheerio, you two men things.
Monica, like a ray of sunshine. You ought to play tennis, are we?
No, why?
Well, you've got your tennis racket in your hand.
Oh, by Jove, so I have. I must have lightly caught it up when leaving the vicarage.
What have you been up to today?
I've been up at Farmer Clutterbuck's, nursing a sick cow.
How good you are. And how unselfish.
I like to bring gladness wherever I go.
Everything and everyone in Wattle Conduces loves our Monica. How is your father, my dear?
Poor dear, he's in disgrace. He's been dreadfully absent-minded again. In giving out the second lesson this morning, he said the epistle to the Australians instead of the Galatians.
Did he, by gad?
Old Simpkins, the verger, has been scolding him dreadfully.
Yeah, well, stupid mistake, but not altogether unnatural. Though, of course, there are wide differences. I mean, the Galatians, for example, were not cricketers. How's the tea interval? Monica, my dear, you must pour for us.
Righty-ho. Hello there, Willis.
Good afternoon, Miss Monica.
Willis, you remember those donkey drops Monica used to bowl?
Indeed I do, young Mr. Norman.
They were always my undoing.
You used to let me get you out.
Oh, indeed he didn't, miss. Your donkey drops caused young Mr. Norman much anguish many an evening.
That'll be all, thank you, Willis.
Thank you, sir.
Your tea, Norman.
Ah, Monica, you were a picture. Slight as a will-o'-the-wisp. Golden ringlets tumbling down over your fair shoulders, your slim arms softly carving a gentle curve through the panting air. And then, oh, sweet surrender. My castle was captured, my sticks unstuck, my bales unbuttoned, all undone.
Talking of slow bowlers, What do you think of young Joe Prestwick? Should we pick him for the Oval? Is anything the matter, my dear?
Whilst young love was burgeoning in the sweet vales of Wattlecombe Deuces, somewhere in a foreign part, two men were waiting.
Dear Mama, so here I am in this dumb burg, waiting with my old buddy Ralphie for the professor, who indeed is deserving of this title on account of his big head and his little body.
Sawnoff Carlo, our inveterate letter writer, a man with the most uncharacteristic eye for detail. It's through these letters that we've been able to piece together so much of the story. Sawnoff Carlo is still alive and was able to give us persuasive reasons as to why his current identity should be kept secret.
The big shot is late.
He'll come.
Oh, sure he'll come, Ralphie, buddy. The professor sure don't like to mess the bad men around. You know, Ralphie, these foreign birds sure get a guy down. They have proved a great disappointment to me.
Don't say that word.
Sorry. Gee, I'd sure like to be home now.
I don't want to talk about home.
All right.
Sorry, Ralphie.
Don't call me Ralphie.
Say, buddy, do I ever tell you how I put Al Campanoli on the spot?
Several times.
Oh, shucks, that's tough. Do I tell you how I croaked Theodore the Gink?
Yes.
Here comes the big guy. Today, the big guy is disguised as an engine driver, which is a very good disguise, since if you didn't know who he was, you'd never know it was him.
My dear sirs, this is indeed a surprise.
Hiya, boss.
You fool. Have I not told you that we are to meet always the strangers?
Oh, boss, there ain't no G-men around in this dumb burg.
It is better, my dear Carlo, to be a bad man than a dead man. And now, my friends, we speak of business. You know why we are here?
Sure, we're going to muscle in on this ball game racket.
You are, as usual, inaccurate. In England, which is to be the scene of our operations, these contests are spoken of not as the ball game, but as matches of crickets. The operations upon which we are about to embark are, I think I may say, of a more far-reaching character than anything we have yet attempted. They have as their object no less than a blow at the heart of that great empire, which our friend Ralph here has so hugely disappointed.
No, please.
Who our employers are must remain a secret even from you, my friends. Let it suffice to say that international interests of the first importance are involved. In consulting me, these gentlemen have shown wisdom of a high order.
You sure loathe and despise yourself, boss.
I trust I have a tolerably just appreciation of my own remarkable powers.
Inevitably, a man of the professor's stature generates endless rumors. We would like to put on record what is firmly established as fact. We know he was born of humble peasant stock. His first utterance was square root. He was 6 weeks old at the time. We have film of him leaving Einstein's house. He said of that encounter, "The man is shallow. He should stick to the violin." By the age of 20, he had written his masterpiece, The Essence of the Absolute. Wittgenstein writes of it as a work of unparalleled genius. Unfortunately, general opinion did not concur. It was regarded by most as unintelligible. This rejection of his masterpiece was obviously wounding. Like Moriarty before him, he became an enemy of society. And now he was about to essay his most ambitious project.
The complete disruption of the British Empire. A task which, as you can imagine, would probably daunt an intellect less remarkable than mine. Having given the matter some thought, however, I have been able to devise a scheme of unparalleled subtlety and effectiveness. It became obvious to me that the British Empire is held together entirely by a series of contests of a game called crickets. Indeed, it is almost impossible to realize the extraordinary reverence with which this crickets is regarded, not only by what is called in the press the sporting fraternity, but by all classes, from the highest to the lowest. Am I not right, Ralph?
Yes.
So firm is the hold which this cricket has upon Englishmen of all classes that it has, in fact, become a synonym for virtue. Thus, an outraged husband, discovering his best friend in the embraces of his wife, will exclaim, "This behavior is not crickets, by Jove." An observation which would appear to be self-evident. And so you see, my friends, A blow struck at this national custom is a blow at the very heart of proud Albion.
No! No! I cannot be a party to this thing.
Rebellion, Ralph? Oh,
heaven knows I am not a pucker fellow. In fact, I am a really bad fellow. Mine has been a life full of shame. But there are limits beyond which even the worst fellow cannot go. But I was ready to join in the assassinating of the President of Gomila and in blowing up the National Bank of Gloritania. But to interfere with a cricket match, and in particular, a test match, no. No, no, Professor, low as I have sunk, I am not as loathsome as that.
You disappoint me, Ralph.
No, 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 please, don't.
Does he know how much he disappoints me, Carmen?
Oh, I guess he does, judging by the way he's writhing on the floor.
Tell me, Ralph, how much you disappoint me.
Oh, must I remember? I'm most disappointed in you, Blessinger, my housemaster. Blessinger, you've brought a great disappointment to me as my headmaster. You've disappointed me, son, my father. Oh, Rafe, what a disappointment you are, my mother. Oh, regard him as I'm you. Ralph, disappointment. Such a runny mass order. Fit for a legion. Ralph, el chasco. Ralph, el desilusion.
The disappointment. Splendid. Now will you obey my orders?
I will obey your orders.
It is well, my friend. You shall have your complete instructions, both of you, within a few days. For the moment, I have no more to say. Good day, my old friends. It is indeed a pleasure to have revived these happy memories. I must go now and oil my engine.
So long, boss. Be seeing ya.
Meanwhile, back in the sleepy village of Waterclumdusis, love was still burgeoning.
Sometimes I'd meet her on the village green of an evening.
Church bells, ducks.
The church bells would be ringing and the ducks would be quacking on the pond.
Louder.
What?
Louder.
And the ducks would be quacking on the
pond. No, the ducks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know if it was just me, but the ducks always seemed to quack louder when Monica walked by.
Cheerio, you old ducks.
Good evening, Miss Monica.
Hello, old Joe. How are your dear peasant parents?
Oh, very well, thank you, Miss Monica. Still wringing the bare living from the soil. Are you going to church?
Yes, I've been having tea at the manor.
The manor?
We've been talking about my donkey trough.
Your donkey trough? There's something I'd like to give you, Miss Monica.
A present for me?
Yeah. It's not much, I know. It's not like the presents a rich man could give you, but I'd like you to have it.
Oh, a cigarette card of you.
Yeah, that's my face.
With love from Prestwick J. Glebeshire. Thank you, Joe. Oh, it's top hole.
They're giving them away with packets of Red Queen. It's got the story of my life on the back.
I shall always value it. Only a week now until the team for the Oval is chosen. Oh, Joe, I hope you play.
Selection committee is above reproach.
Oh, of course. All the same, it would be wonderful.
Thank you, Miss Monica.
Won't you call me Monica?
May I?
Good night, old Joe.
Good night, Monica.
It was around that time that I started writing poetry.
He still does. Yes. You've had some poems published, haven't you, Joe?
In the village paper, yes.
And so, for the first time in 10 years, I was back. Back in that green and pleasant land. It was torture. Sheer torture. Second day back, I had to take Carlo to the Oval to introduce him to the game we were about to irrevocably undermine. Two teams of vicars were playing. Carlo was singularly unenlightened by the experience. Meanwhile, the professor was busy perfecting his plans. His first port of call was a house agent's in Loamshire. I'll give him this. He did have a marvellous eye for detail.
Good morning. Are you Frith or Pierce?
Well, actually, neither. Perfect's the name.
Perfect. I, as you can see from my large-brimmed floppy hat, my big floppy bow tie, my black velvet jacket, and the fact that I am carrying an easel under my arm, am an artist. I am Popplewell R.A. Are you a devotee of crickets?
Yes, I...
Splendid. Then I am confident we can do business together. For as L.E.G. Glance has observed in his noble work, Principles of Sound Crickets, what sweeter music than the crack of bat dispatching the leather to the ropes across the green tapis? But enough chittle-chattle on subjects of mutual interest. I have long intended to paint the sweeping expanses of scenery to be found in this neighborhood. With this object in view, I propose to settle here for a short while. In short, house agent, as you say in your admirable profession, I desire a res.
How many rooms?
I care not one jot of it.
Oh, but I say...
But the only condition upon which I insist is that the res must be sit in surroundings of the greatest loneliness. For one of my temperament and artistic eminence, seclusion is the imperative. I should prefer to a res with a cellar mit a strong door. Many of my canvases are of immense value. You understand?
I think I have exactly what you're after.
The day I missed that catch at long leg off Swiggins G. By rights it was a dolly, but my mind just wasn't on the job, you see, Mr. Johnson. So I wrote to Monica that very night, asking to see her on the village green the next evening.
Good evening, old Joe.
Good evening, Monica. Be playing golf, then?
No, why?
You've got a golf club in your hand.
Oh! I must have lightly caught it up on leaving the vicarage. Isn't it a beautiful evening? The sun looks like a great big cricket ball, doesn't it?
It does, Monica. You couldn't drop that one, could you?
Is that what you wanted to talk to me about?
You've heard, have you?
I read of it in the paper.
The paper said it was a chance that should have been accepted. It's true. It should have been accepted.
And why did you not accept it?
I was thinking of something else.
That was very wrong, Joe.
I know. Don't think I haven't tasted the bitterest remorse, but I could not help myself. I was making up a poem. A love poem, Monica.
Oh, Joe. When you were fielding at long leg.
Don't reproach me, Monica. I know I deserve it, but I just couldn't help it. Would you like to hear the poem?
Oh, yes.
Oh, Monica, whose lovely face is matched by thy tremendous grace.
Oh, Joe, you mean you missed a catch because of me?
Yes, that's why I had to speak to you tonight. The thought of you is spoiling my fielding. Monica, my darling, I'm only a cricket pro, but
only?
But I love you, Monica. I've loved you ever since the day you bought me the belt. Do you remember?
Remember? The day shall be forever etched into my heart.
You saved me from shame that day, Monica. That was like you, so tender always, so thoughtful for others. Oh, Monica, will you marry me?
Here, Joe, is a chance that will certainly be accepted.
Oh, you mean you will marry me?
If Father consents, Joe.
Oh, Monica, darling, I can hardly believe it. Are you sure you don't mind my parents being only rude old peasants?
As though I could. Besides, I don't suppose they are as rude as all that.
I'm afraid they are. They're a bit gnarled, too. It comes from wringing a bare living from the soil. Are you sure you don't mind?
Gnarled or not, they are the parents of the man I love. Look, Joe! The sky has gone the colour of the Glebeshire cricket team.
Blow me down if it hasn't.
Of course, Daddy had always hoped I'd marry Norman. He'd set his heart on it, really. Poor man was a little bit shocked. But in the end, he gave his consent. On one condition, Joe play at the Oval.
I could wish for nothing better, sir. We are in the hands of the selection committee.
Yes, my boy. May Providence guide them rightly in their decisions.
Oh, Father, that means you want me to marry Joe?
No, I'm thinking of the supreme importance of beating Australia.
Amen.
When does the selection committee ascend in their balloon?
Tomorrow. The professor came to visit me on the day the selectors ascended in their balloon. I was living in lodgings at the time.
Lodgings?
Well, I lived there, didn't I?
Oh, yes, my sweet.
Well, I did. Mm. Oh, if you had seen the brilliance of his eyes, the dome-like forehead, the hypnotic power of the man. Oh, he was a genius, all right, no doubting that. I was bowled over. I would have done anything for him.
No comment.
Oh, shut up, Ralphie.
Oh, those days of waiting for the balloon to descend were some of the most wretched of my life. I found it so hard to concentrate on any of my good works about the village, though goodness knows I tried. But then the balloon came down, and I saw that old Joe's name was included in the 13. I was ecstatic. I rushed immediately to see Father.
Who put a bit of a damper on things, didn't he?
I was going to say that, Joe. Yes, he pointed out that Joe might not make the 11. I refused to believe that possibility. I rushed out to see Joe on the village green. Oh, Joe.
Oh, Monica.
If only you are chosen, Joe.
If only I am chosen, Monica. Mind where you swing that coat stand, Monica.
I must have lightly caught it up on leaving the vicarage. Oh, Joe.
Oh, Monica.
We'd arranged to meet at the Panatrope Palace of Varieties to finalize plans. The professor came disguised as a tired businessman.
My George, my old college chum!
Howdy, boss!
This is indeed a surprise, by Jove. Hey, oh, how long it seems since our madcap student days at Oxford University.
Say, boss, I ain't never been a student no place.
Pascal, you grow more stupid every day. We must drink, my old chums, to celebrate this happy reunion. Oh, there, mine host. Ah! 3 glasses of foaming English ale.
Here you are, sir.
Cheerio, my companions. A health, as we old students say, to our alma mater. Well, my friends, our plans are in train. You brought it over safely, Ralph?
Yes. It's where we arranged.
Excellent, excellent. For the moment, I shall say no more. We shall be joined presently by a lady.
Gee, a dog, huh? Say, what's the big idea of this frail boss?
That would unfold itself. Suffice it for the moment to say that the cooperation of Flash Alice is essential to my plans. And behold, here she comes. My hat! My delightful niece! This is indeed a surprise. Allow me to present to you, my dear, my old college chum.
Evening, boys. Gin and tonic for me.
Come here, miss!
Glad to know you, sister. Sit down, honey bunch.
What are you staring at, lover boy?
Bog pool on sea.
How did you know that?
What is this, a previous acquaintanceship?
Ralph, the disappointment.
Oh, no.
You two know each other?
We were neighbors once in Perth.
How are your mother and father?
I haven't seen them since that time. And you?
And not since I won the beauty contest at Bogpool-on-Sea.
If yes. I may interrupt this touching reunion, we have business to discuss.
Gee, Mama, has that doll got swell curves, or has she? She's the kind of dame I could fall for in a big way. But the big guy wants to talk business.
So now you have the outline of Plan A. Do not forget it. Ah, the performance recommences. Well, au revoir, chums of my boyhood. Au wiedersehen, TTFN. How I have enjoyed reviving the memory of old clients.
So long, boss. Say, honey bunch, I'll be seeing you.
Sure.
Certainly not. As soon as Flash Alice has completed her part in this affair, she will disappear. Until then, you will have absolutely no contact with each other, you understand?
Goodbye, Alice. Nice meeting you again.
And you.
Do you remember those games of cricket we used to play in my garden? You were a jolly good spin bowler.
So were you, Ralphie.
I remember you bowled me the only unplayable ball I've ever had to face in my life.
Out of the back of my hand.
Oh, it's the one. An absolute corker.
fizzing through the air like a slow-motion bullet, landing on a perfect length and spinning at right angles.
Not quite a right angle.
Well, almost. Do you still play?
Not anymore, Ralphie. You?
I'm thinking of taking it up again.
You should. You were very good.
I am loath to interrupt this discourse on the merits of what is best in crickets, but the performance, as you can hear, has recommenced, and it is time we rediscovered our seats. Ralph, come with me.
Yeah. Goodbye, Alice.
Goodbye, Ralph.
And so the great day arrived. You were in ominously good form, weren't you, Lev?
Well, Norm, I suppose I was quite fit.
Quite fit? I love old cricketers. They're such characters. Quite fit? His last two scores prior to the Oval Test match were 400 odd and a 200 and something.
422. And 276.
Quite fit? No, but seriously, Lev. Tell me, never asked you this one. Do you think we picked the right side?
That's a tricky one, Norm.
If only Joe is playing, Father.
It is hardly a spin bowler's wicket, my child.
Say, Honeybunch, am I in the right joint for the ball game?
I beg your pardon?
Yes, you are.
Have they tossed yet?
I believe they have. Oh. England have chosen to bat.
Well, it looks like a splendid wicket.
Yes, indeed.
Daddy, look! The team list. Oh! 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 12 men!
Now, my dear. Pull yourself together.
Yes. So sorry, Father. Please forgive me. I know it's England that matters. I promise. I'll be a splendid English girl and keep a stiff upper lip.
Ah, here come human fly to open the innings. Look at that extraordinary man with his dome-like forehead and piercing eyes.
The BBC have managed to unearth commentary of this test match, so we have the opportunity to hear again the voice of one of our most distinguished commentators. I refer, of course, to the great John Bell Travers. John, as many of you will know, was a great enthusiast and no mean cricketer in his own right. John Bell Travers.
So it'll be Hugh to take strike. Sitting beside me is Alf Blowman, the Yorkshire quickie. Alf, Hugh's just asked for the sight screen to be moved. Why is that, do you think?
Yes. Oh, good morning, John. Good morning, everyone.
And Bubba has three slips, four short legs and a silly point, as well as the customary mid-off. And we're all set. First ball of this last test, this timeless test that by definition must have a result. And Bumper is running up. Hostile bowler, this Bumper. Tall, strongly built, full of menace. Hugh waits, solid, majestic, a king awaiting the deference of his subjects. There's an enormous crowd here today. One man over there with an extraordinary dome-like forehead. Bumper still running, Hugh still waiting like a king. The fielders all crouching in their yellow caps. I don't mean they're actually crouching in them. They're not that small. The fielders, I mean, not the caps, which are quite small. And Bumper's nearing the wicket now. I suppose I mean they're in their yellow caps, all crouching, except for the mid-off, that is, who's standing in his yellow cap, and the bowler, who isn't wearing his, and he's at the wicket now, and he bowls. Outside the off stump, Hugh moves across, full of majesty, smiles contemptuously, and leaves it alone. Bumper starts walking back to his mark. Alf, these caps, they really are very yellow, aren't they?
That's right, John. This Bumper lad, I hadn't seen him before this tour, but...
And Ben informs me that was Bumper's 925th ball of the series.
Really?
Oh, it was grim stuff, all right.
Torture, sheer torture. It was certainly full of grim drama, those opening overs.
An hour and a half's been played, and as yet no score. Cue, not out, naught. Cry, not out, naught. Total, naught. Grim back to the wall stuff, this cricket. Every ball full of grim and back to back, two up, two down. Very sooty drama. And I must just say a thank you on behalf of the commentary team to Mrs. Morgan of Kilve for her splendid lemon sponge. We shall enjoy that later.
I was in the dressing room when it happened, writing a farewell letter.
One of the most beautiful letters I've ever received. I have it off by heart. You see, old Joe here might have come from rude peasant stock, and might indeed have had parents who spat in a fire and kicked sheep and spoke with two dots over their vowels and wrung a bare living from the soil. But Joe himself was one of nature's gentlemen.
And Bumper Bowles. And oh dear, Hugh has inadvertently let this ball hit his bat, and it's trickling down through the slips, and they're going to take a run. Extraordinary piercing eyes that man has, and they're running, and my word, whatever's the matter? The two batsmen have fallen down dead on the wicket. Well, goodness me. Bill, any instances you can recall of both batsmen retiring dead simultaneously? I'll leave that one with you for the present. And the fielders in their yellow caps have stopped crouching and are walking over to take a look. Well. Alf, I don't expect you used to die in your day, did you?
Yeah, you can say that again, John. No, seriously, though. I just don't know why these young lads can't keep it up.
Plan A had begun to take effect.
Yes, I just finished writing the letter when you and Cry was brought into the dressing room for the life of me, dead as sheep.
Dead as dead sheep.
That's right.
It was a lovely letter, old Joe. I still have it, you know.
I know.
How did it begin?
Dear Monica.
Dear Monica.
I had to think fast. When I got back to the dressing room, I discovered old little Teddy Trimmer was out as well, lying curled up in a corner. He was supposed to be first wicket in. So I remember turning to little Croxton, our keeper, and saying, "Feeling fit?" "Feeling fine," came back his doughty northern reply. "Very well," I said. "You and I will hold the fort for England." Which we did. 8 for no wicket at lunch.
A doctor soon discovered they weren't dead. They'd just been drugged. Sir Timothy was horrified, of course. Someone phoned Scotland Yard, and before you could say, "How's that?" Posse had arrived.
I can't remember, old Joe. Had you sent the letter by then, or was it still on your person?
Oh, I think it was still on my person.
Still glowing on your person. Dear Monica, it began.
Police! Police! Posse here, out of the way, please!
Posse, a pseudonym, of course, is still alive. However, he now works for the security services, so was unable to comment on these events, except to tell us that he'd eaten a kipper the morning of the first day of the Oval Test match. Our lawyers, after careful scrutiny, have confirmed that the inclusion of Posse in our story is not prejudicial to the national security.
Posse here, out of the way, please! Out of the way!
Are these the two men?
Yes.
Rigor mortis has obviously set in. How long do you say these men had been dead?
They're not dead, they're drugged.
Drugged? Understood from the wireless, this was a murder case. Well, never mind. I shall unravel it. Get busy, boys. Now then, I want some information.
A foreigner has done this.
Possibly. Though, of course, it might equally well have been a socialist.
Yes, that is true. Yet I often said that I would rather see all the pavilions in England burnt to the ground than see them containing a foreigner or a socialist. Well, I've been proved right.
Who are you?
I am Sir Timothy Blood, the popular veteran and doyen of the cricketing world.
All right. Anything to say?
Oh, only that I shall thank heaven with my last breath that this did not happen at Lord's.
Why not at Lord's?
Because, my dear fellow, Lord's is the mecca of cricket lovers all the world over.
Ah, yes, sir. What is this mecca, anyway?
Frankly, I do not know. But I've always imagined it to be a very large cricket ground somewhere in Asia.
Oh,
they're coming round.
Run! No! Door! Am I out?
You have been, but you're all right now.
Oh, I don't remember getting out. Was it that wretched LBW Naught again?
Oh, my brave little fella. You've been the victim of a dastardly trick.
Some villain has attempted to tamper with our national pastime.
Oh, who could it have been?
That is for the police to discover. If they can.
Right. Now, you two, have you any idea of how this happened?
Well, not a clue.
Laura, who would have thought it?
You took nothing to drink of any kind before going into bat.
Oh, only the special drink that Mr. Blood sent us.
I sent you no drink.
But the waitress told us that you'd sent it specially. She said that the drink had special tonic qualities and we were to drink it to the health of England. Now, isn't that right, you?
That is right.
See here, boys. What was she like, this waitress?
She was a very pretty but rather fast-looking girl. She had very red hair and violet eyes.
Right.
And glamour. Lots of glamour.
We're getting somewhere now. The drug was in a drink brought by a bogus waitress. I reckon we've got to find that girl with the red hair and...
Violet eyes.
And violet eyes.
Why not find out if there are any foreigners on the ground, and if so, arrest them?
Or socialists.
Or socialists. Trimmer's coming round.
Wait!
Now, Trimmer, you were brought a drink which was purported to have been sent to you by Mr. Blood. Is that right?
No, Inspector.
Think carefully, man. The solution to the whole case may depend upon your answer. Are you quite certain that you were not brought a drink by a beautiful waitress with red hair and violet eyes?
No, but that just describes the small boy who asked me for my autograph at the back of the pavilion.
Did you give it to him?
Yes.
Did you use your own pencil?
No, the boy had one already.
Aha! The drug was administered through the pencil. You're from the working classes, aren't you?
Am I?
So, that's how it was done.
How was it done?
The working classes always lick the ends of pencils.
By Jove, how cruel.
Ever since our last tour there, Peter, those Australian cards have been dying to wreak their revenge.
True. And they're foreigners to boot.
And almost certainly socialists, or will be within the next 100 years.
Which can only mean...
Everyone fit? As if you didn't know, Lethbridge. Well, let me tell you, it takes more than violet-haired foreign waitresses to undermine our national pastime.
What are you talking about?
We will answer your perfidy in the only way a gentleman should. By defeating you on the field of play.
Now listen, you don't think we had anything to do with all this, do you?
Listen, Lethbridge, don't play the innocent with me. We all know what you foreign convict socialists are like.
The last copper to call me a socialist ended up in hospital.
Don't for a moment think that your threats can frighten me, you revenge-mad, bad sportsman.
Bad sportsman? That takes a biscuit. Who was it who started chucking balls at our throats, eh?
You lily-livered wallabies.
I'll get you for that.
Look! What? Scrawled all over the portrait of W.G.
In red lipstick.
The bad man.
Of course, I knew in my heart of hearts that it couldn't have been old Leth here.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Norman.
Well, truth will out. Anyway, the second day, thank goodness, was near enough normal, and we ended up eating Stevens. Wouldn't you say, Leth?
Near enough, I'd say.
This chap here has got a tidy 70-odd.
78, not out.
But they only had a lead of 30-odd.
44.
So it was all Eden Stevens. Wouldn't you say, Leth?
Near enough, Norman.
Daddy and I were staying at Sir Timothy's Flood Street house for the duration of the game. I remember that evening of the second day very well indeed. I'd just received old Joe's letter. There we all were, sitting at the dinner table, talking about cricket... And all I could think about was that dear, sweet letter. That lovely letter.
Perhaps we could forget about the letter, my dear.
Forget about it? How could I forget about it? It was the loveliest letter I've ever received. Would you like to hear it, Miss Johnson?
Certainly, my dear.
No.
Dear Monica, we must accept the decision of the selection committee, my darling, and remember that the most important thing of all is to beat Australia. I keep biting my lips a good deal and clenching and unclenching my fists in unrestrained fashion. But we must remember that perhaps the wicket would not have suited me. Goodbye, dearest Monica. I shall always keep the belt and remember your extraordinary radiance. Your broken-hearted, unselected Joe. That was it. That was the letter.
Oh, splendid letter.
It was at the end of the second day's play that we put Plan B into operation.
we were having dinner, and...
Sir Timothy was talking about Joshua Slingsby, who'd run him out.
And so there I was, one short of the coveted three figures.
Excuse me, oh, sir.
What is it, Willis?
A gentleman downstairs wishes to speak to young Mr. Norman.
Who?
Yes, the arrival of the so-called selection committee was indeed a drama.
This black car pulled up outside the house, and this big man got out wearing the mask. He told the butler he wanted to see the captain of the ball game, because he was the selection committee. Well, I felt something was wrong from the start. Oh, unfortunately, I couldn't quite put my finger on it at the time.
You may be wondering what dear old Joe was doing outside Sir Timothy's Flood Street house. Well, you see, he'd posted himself there in hope of catching a last glimpse of me, hadn't you, Joe?
That's right, Monica.
Both of us were broken-hearted, you see.
Well, I knew the selection committee were always fairly secretive, so when the masked man asked me to get in the car, I didn't give it a second thought. As soon as I got in the car, however, I knew I'd made a mistake. I felt something hard poke in my ribs and a voice in my ear.
So, Mama, I says to him, you're in a tough spot, buddy. If you don't want to hand in your dinner pail, better act old-fashioned and don't try to pull a fast one. Likewise, keep your push shut, or I'd sure give you the heat.
I can tell you, oh, that was one of the lowest moments of my life. I felt what can only be described as the blackest despair. I thought about tomorrow. Oh, what if I wasn't there to lead my boys at the start of play? What would the world think of me? I don't mind admitting that I let a groan escape my lips.
And then, just as the car began to move away, I realized what was wrong with this so-called selection committee. They really knew what they were doing. So without hesitation, I sprang for the back of the car and hung on to the luggage grid for dear life.
You must remember, I had not the slightest inkling that any of this was happening.
Oh, that's right. So, through the night, the black car sped.
Out of London and into the countryside, through the night, the black car sped.
Well, it was a bit uncomfortable, I have to admit, hanging on to the luggage grid. But once you've made up your mind, you've only got your body to do something with.
It's marvellous what these chaps can do when they put their mind to it. Of course, if he'd been a batsman, it would have been more comfortable. Stronger forearms, you know. Anyway, it must have been well after midnight when we finally drew up before a small stone house in the middle of a vast, lonely moor, where a hooded figure awaited us.